Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, before we dive on into today's episode, we have a special announcement.
Yeah, in case you missed the announcement earlier this week, Through the Gryffindor is going on tour. We're calling it Through the Griffin Tour.
Yes, it's going to be just like the episodes that you see every single week here on the main show, but we're going to be doing it live with a studio audience. Is that how you would describe it? Will there be a laugh track?
I mean, I don't know if it's like a studio, but there will be a live audience, like a theater audience.
Ooh.
Even better.
It's going to be so much fun, you guys. We're going to be doing the main episode recording. We're also going to have a Q&A and some trivia baked in there as well. It's going to be such a good time. If you want to go and buy tickets, you can do so by going to the show notes and going to each of the respective venues. We've got one for Boston, New York City, Philadelphia, and DC.
Yeah, it's going to be super good. It's happening this June. So I'll throw some dates in there for you as well. It's going to be Boston on Sunday, June 2nd, New York, Monday, June 3rd, Philadelphia, Wednesday, June 5th, and Washington, D.C., Thursday, June 13th. So mark your calendars.
Yes, we hope to see you there, and on with the episode.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 10, The Rogue Bludger.
Oh, man. I always love a Quidditch chapter.
Oh, my gosh. I know. It's like, even when we like do the what-ifs, whenever we've done the big series that go like five or six episodes or eight for What If Harry Was in Slytherin, like there'll be times like, well, we got to write the Quidditch match now. And it's like, this ends up being super fun.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Quidditch in general, this is something that like, I was definitely in this chapter in particular. It might be like one of my favorite Quidditch matches ever because like, it's just interesting to see the ways that like everybody's like looking out for Harry. It's kind of like the classic.
Not everyone.
I mean, in a way, everyone, but in another way, not so everyone.
In a way, not Madam Hooch. In a way,
that's true. You know. But like, you know, it's just like, it's such an epic moment because, I mean, we've sort of, you know, we're pretty far into the book at this point in time. I mean, at least, I think, halfway.
Just about. Maybe we're cracking halfway.
Yeah, and it feels like we've been given a lot of information about like the Slytherin Quidditch team and their fancy new brooms, and it kind of seems like Quidditch has been like, you know, challenging, and they've been out in like harsh weather, and it's been just exhausting, and,
yeah,
you know, all the rest. But then it's sort of like, okay, so like you're coming into it like with expectations being set kind of low. And then right away, it's sort of like, oh man, Harry's being targeted. Like, this is going to be.
It is like right away. I don't think I really noticed that this time. It's like, and we're off, and the Bludger's after Harry.
I know. You know, I thought the exact same thing. I was like, in my head, they got like 5-10 minutes into the game before like this actually started to be a problem. But no, it's actually, I mean, it is in the immediate.
That is what makes it all the worse that Madam Hooch doesn't notice. It's like, if 10 minutes of gameplay had gone by and like nothing had happened, everything was pretty normal, and then all of a sudden it started happening, like there'd be reason to like not be paying attention to that anymore.
Right, you know? I know. Yeah, and it's funny too, because it's like, you know, I feel like Fred and George pick up on it almost immediately, and I'm like, what are they doing paying so much attention to, you know, Harry for? And it's like, no, I mean, probably because once the game starts, their eyes are just like, I mean, they're probably dialed in on the Bludger, so I bet immediately it was like, wait a second, this is weird. Like, you know, for them, they have they probably know the Bludgers quite well.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, this is very apparent. But then like even like Malfoy is sort of like training for the ballet, Potter.
And right.
It's sort of like, where is Madam Hooch?
I know. It's
what,
like,
or like, what are the teachers? Is nobody watching like the star person out there on the field?
It is so weird, because it's like the pitch. It makes it sound like Harry's up there doing all these weird loop-de-whoops and avoiding the Bludger. Like everyone in the crowd is watching him. Malfoy's watching him. The other, even the Slytherin beaters must just sort of like notice, you know, like, and, well, there's only one.
I mean, it's the age old issue over and over for Harry and the Golden Trio, which is just basically that, like, if a parent or a teacher or anybody could have just like stepped in and done something, it's like probably a lot of things would have gone just like a lot better.
But what's super frustrating is they call time out and they come over and Madam Hooch is like, everything okay? And they're like, yup.
It's like, well, we're certainly not going to forfeit the game because one of our players is being obviously targeted.
Harry has such an annoying line in here. He's like, if we stop now, we'll have to forfeit the match. It's like, no, what? No, you won't. No, you won't.
Right. Yeah.
If you like stopping now, like, why would you forfeit the match? Why on earth wouldn't it even just be like, even if worst case scenario, the match ends, it'd be like, well, this Bludger was clearly tampered with the entire time. So like, and at this point, they think the Slytherins did it. So what they think is going to happen is that the Slytherins will be found out having tampered a rogue Bludger, and then they'll still get to win the match.
Yes, exactly. You know,
like,
exactly.
There's just the amount of logic not happening on the page is like unbelievable during the Quidditch match. But
no, it really is. It really is. But either which way, I mean, it's a really fun round of Quidditch, and it does seem like the Slytherins are basically, you know, pretty locked and loaded with those new broomsticks. And that being said, it actually is a perfect setup for us to review the chapter art for Chapter 10, the Rogue Bludger, because what we get in this particular piece of chapter art is, of course, one Harry James Potter sitting in his bed at the hospital wing, which I really love the bed because it's got like on like the little post, it's got like a star on one end and a moon on the other, and I'm like, I love the asymmetry of this bed frame.
It looks like the moon side is almost like significantly higher than the star side as well, and yeah, it's a very whimsical hospital bed.
It really is, yeah. Which I mean, there's actually a really cozy moment that I'll come back to later. But yeah, so then of course the other big thing is that the reason that Harry is in the hospital wing is not because of the broken arm; it's because of the bone-free nature of his arm. Mm-hmm.
The noodle arms.
The noodle arms.
Yeah.
The rubber glove is the piece of it that always makes me so like uncomfy. It's like, oh, I don't want to think about my hand being like a rubber glove. That's so horrifying. But anyway, you get to see Harry's noodle arm there. And then what else? I mean, and this is not really like a necessary part of the image, but I think it's interesting that they included, is that like there's a shadow being cast of the bed frame on the wall behind Harry. And it's like, do you see that there?
Yeah, I do.
Like,
yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Why not include the shadow?
Sure, like, it's there.
I wonder if like visually they were like, it's sort of like an off-balanced image. It's like, you know, we need to put like Harry closer to the middle, so we need more information to the right of this particular image. Do you sort of follow? Like it would.
But even without the shadow, it looks like totally normal. So I'm even trying to think, like, is it the correct, would the shadow hit the wall base? Because the shadow of his arm is also on the blanket. Like, where is the light source for these shadows?
I don't know, but the lighting was very essential for this particular illustration.
Yeah.
I love it. I would give it 10 out of 10 gold stars.
10 out of 10. It's a good one. It's got Harry with the noodle arms. Very fun. Yes, very indeed. Fun.
Yes. Other which way, we can go ahead and dive on into the chapter, which starts right away with a little bit of mention of Professor Lockhart's last class and the episode with the pixies.
Yeah, but now he's not doing any more live demonstrations. I guess he decided that he can't fake his way through it, so instead he's just reading from his books and reenacting stuff, which is like, okay. It's great that he's reenacting them because they didn't even happen. You know,
I know. But what I think is the funniest thing about this is that he's recruited Harry to play like all of the essential and otherwise very demeaning roles. And it's kind of hilarious to sort of imagine this actually playing out before your own two eyes, because like to hear it described, you know, it's one of those things where you can just sort of be like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, he was just making Harry do like something embarrassing, but to actually imagine being in Harry's position and having the teacher say something like, nice loud howl, Harry. Exactly.
I know. Like, I literally highlighted that and I was just like, the shame. Like, I would be so embarrassed, like, so endlessly by being forced to do this.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like the absolute worst. And the fact that he says exactly, note I wrote next to it was, Harry actually apparently howled.
I know. That's the, he plays along.
He does. It's like, I can't imagine Harry agreeing to this. But so then my big curiosity was sort of like, we know that, Grindelwald, Lockhart, he must know that Harry has actual and genuine fame of his own.
Yes.
But like, he definitely fronts as if he's like in this position to be like coaching Harry and sort of like guiding him through the ups and downs of what it's going to be like to be famous, and like, oh, you watch me and I'll teach you. Which, you know, of course, whenever we go to Dumbledore's big plan, our whole theory here is that basically Dumbledore hired Lockhart specifically to show Harry what not to do.
Right.
To be like that working example. But my big curiosity is whether or not he has recruited Harry for this particular role in an effort to like intentionally lessen Harry's own status, like as if Lockhart has showed up and is a bit insecure over the fact that like Harry has real reason to be famous when he doesn't, and he knows that.
Right, but if he can position himself as the one that as like Harry's mentor, then that makes him like almost a little bit more legitimately famous.
Well, even in his own head, it's like, yes, it's like, ah, yes, let me mentor you, because if you are my mentee, even that means like, okay, any success he has is really just an extension of my own success.
Exactly.
Right?
But
in this particular case, I think this is slightly different. Like, I don't think him recruiting Harry for all of these like reenactments is part of this like, you know, proposed coaching situation. I think this is literally Lockhart, like his insecurity manifesting, and he is like, yeah, I'm gonna have Harry get up in front of the class and he is gonna look real silly.
Right, like I will make him kind of do something embarrassing and he'll be the thing I'm defeating. So like if you're watching it, perhaps you like subconsciously realize that like I am the greater wizard between us.
Right. Yes. Right. Like, sure, Harry led to the downfall of the Dark Lord, but now he's looking up to me, which again, you know, like we'll leverage all this situation. You know, he's involved in my things, he's my villain, I'm defeating them. So ipso facto, I'm more powerful than the kid who brought about the fall of the Dark Lord.
Ipso facto.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, just classic Lockhart knowledge.
I know. Speaking of classic Lockhart knowledge, I love when he describes how he defeats the Wagga Wagga werewolf.
Yes, I know.
So there's so many things happening here. First of all, he says, I screwed up my remaining strength and performed the immensely complex Haemorphous Charm, which one, the Haemorphous Charm, I looked this up. I was like, is this a real thing? Because like we know there's no cure for like a werewolf bite. And as far as we know, like the Wolfsbane potion, doesn't even stop you from transforming. It just like lets you keep your mind when you're transformed.
Correct. Yeah.
And so I looked this up, and it seems like there it is. At best, it will temporarily transform a werewolf back into a person.
Okay.
But like it is also one of these things where it's like it's unclear if it's even real. But even if it is, it doesn't. Like, he might have transformed this person for a few minutes, but they would have just come right back.
Right.
Kind of thing. Like, yeah. It seems like they could have turned you back, and then the moon would just pull you back into werewolf.
More on the moon later. But then I love how he says, the immensely complex amorphous charm. And then one sentence later, he goes, simple yet effective. And it's like, well, was it immensely complex or was it simple?
Yeah, you know? Right.
It's like just a little oxymoronic there, my man.
No, you're absolutely correct. I know. Yeah. So it's such a ridiculous, because I mean, basically what he is claiming here is to have cured somebody of, because he says that he's delivered them from delivered them, which is kind of a weird phrasing, from the monthly terror of werewolf attacks, which, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, is suggesting that like whatever he did was resolving this man's werewolf affliction.
Right. Or else imprisoning him, I guess.
I guess so.
As well. I don't know.
Like anybody else could have done that whilst he was in man form anyway.
That also seems quite possible.
You know, because he's only a werewolf during the full moon.
During the full moon, you know. Yeah.
I did write down the Wagga Wagga werewolf detail there, because that was one of those where it's just like, and this chapter is full of these, but there's a lot of like little random, like very trivia question type situations.
The Wagga Wagga werewolf.
The Wagga Wagga werewolf is, this is like the,
Wagga Wagga.
You very famously, once upon a time in our Jay versus Ben episodes over for Super Carlin Brothers, were able to pull the Wadi Wasi charm.
Yeah.
Out of your brain skull.
That's right.
In order to defeat me on that particular occasion, which, you know, let's be fair, is almost all occasions you've usually defeated me. But I've always found it to be one of the more absurd, you know, details that you remembered. But I mean, with 1,000 guesses, I never would have pulled Wagga Wagga werewolf.
I would not either. I was like, Wagga Wagga werewolf. Does it always say that? Like, did you listen to it? Is that what he says? The Wagga Wagga werewolf?
That is what he says. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
WWW werewolf.
Yeah, oh man! So then he does assign the homework, which is a poem about his defeat of the Wagga Wagga werewolf.
You know, I don't hate the homework assignment. It does sound like a little bit more like creatively taxing on the students.
I could sort of see that, because in order to write, you know, like something in terms of like a rhyming format, you sort of got to go more deep into the creative vault, and it shows you must have like some type of comprehension about the event itself in order to piece it together. So I mean, maybe not a terrible assignment, but obviously incredibly self-indulgent to the tune of the best poem will get a signed copy of Magical Me.
Yeah. So he's also using it as a way to, I guess, promote himself as well. And you have to imagine that really what he wants to read is everyone's poems about himself.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, more than like, I want you to understand the literary happenings on the page here or
exactly,
anything.
Exactly.
Yep. All right, so then after class, Harry, Ron, and Hermione decide that they are going to try and get him to sign a form so that they can get most potent potions out of the restricted section and start brewing themselves some polyjuice potion. Although and Hermione says that it would help her understand what you're saying in Gadding with Ghouls about slow-acting venoms. And he says that's his favorite book, or possibly his favorite book.
Yeah, I know. This is like one where I feel like, actually, this whole chapter is really a great example of it. But Hermione is like definitely, it's interesting because she has massive blinders on when it comes to Lockhart. Like,
yeah.
It's so confusing to me that like Hermione is so good at being highly logical that like she can normally like see through all of the like extraneous details about something that might like cause it to be misleading. But with Lockhart, it's like she just keeps giving him a pass over and over and over again. But on this particular occasion, she's still basically playing against his ego to get him to do, you know, what she's hoping to do.
Right. It's like on the one hand, she believes that he is the hero he says he is. But on the other hand, she's like, I can take advantage of your ego to get you to sign a form for me.
Yes, precisely. The benefit of the doubt thing is kind of interesting, though, like, you know, to apply it out in the real world. It's like, it's always one of those questions where it's like, is there ever anybody who you would have felt like you're giving like the benefit of the doubt over and over again? Like, you know, it's like, like that seems a little, but you know, I'm trying to look.
Yeah, just ignoring all the red flags over and over.
Yeah.
I'm sure there have been many a relationship out there where you're like, it's okay. They like me.
Right. Yeah. Just look right past that.
Look right past. It's okay. I'm willing to let it slide.
It'll be totally fine.
Yeah. He does say though that Hermione is the best student of the year. So he's like aware of that as well. Like that's an accurate thing he says.
Right. So he is at least able to acknowledge the fact that she is quite a good student. Although she's also the one who was able to remember that his favorite color is lilac. So
that's true.
It's possible he's referencing more her knowledge of him
right.
more than
That's
her knowledge in class. But on that exact note, as Hermione is continuing to, I'm going to call it manipulate him because I think it's better than actually being, you know, enamored with him. But she says, so clever the way that you trapped the last one with that tea strainer, which is I bring up mostly just because, once again, I think it's really good trivia. So it's like one of those things where it's like, in Gilderoy Lockhart's Gadding with Ghouls, how was he able to trap the last ghoul?
Yeah, you know, in a tea strainer.
In a tea strainer. Again, you wouldn't get it with 1,000 guesses, but now maybe you will because you've listened to this podcast.
Exactly.
Good on you.
Also, like, it's, and I'm curious what the situation was with the ghoul, because gadding with ghouls just sounds like talking with ghouls. So like you're trapping them, and also like the, if you know, assuming that most ghouls are like the ghoul in Ron's attic, like it wasn't like particularly dangerous with, or anything.
That's a good point. Like this is a question of like, we know that Lockhart is not above lying, and we know that he's not like what his actual chief ability is memory charm. So what he does is finds people who have actually achieved great things and just like erases their memory and basically like takes the story from them and claims it as his own. But the hilarious thing about getting with ghouls is that ghouls aren't terribly dangerous. One of them lives in the Weasley's house.
Right.
So it's sort of like, and it lives there sort of like amicably, shy of making noisy,
like, yeah, just like banging on the pipes,
yeah, in the
or whatever. It's like, right. But they let it stay up there.
They let it stay up there. It's like they say, like, we have a ghoul,
right?
I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, yeah, we have a cat,
we got a ghoul.
It's here sometimes.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to get rid of it, or it's like, you know, it's up there.
It's up there.
It's up there.
We feed it. I mean, because at some point in time, Ron is like, he just ate.
You know? Does he say that?
I think he does. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They feed it. That's weird.
Right? I mean, so yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's
I get rid of it. I don't want a ghoul in my wizard house.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm not necessarily a fan, but they also just don't seem that dangerous. So this is like one of those where I'm like, I don't know how the wizarding populace is not more sort of like, what there's not really a kind of heroic involved in your gadding with ghouls. It seems more just like brunch with an unpleasant brunch guest.
Right? Trapped it with a tea strainer too. Like, what does that even mean?
It means that at brunch,
yeah,
you use the tea strainer to trap it. But you're right; it seems like a tea strainer would be quite small, and ghouls are not that small.
No, yeah, so, anyway. So not exactly. But again, it's like apparently someone did trap one with a tea strainer.
Apparently. Well, good for them.
For them. And then apparently, Gilderoy Lockhart was a seeker when he was in school. This sounds like an outright lie, if you're asking me. I was seeker too. You know, I was asked to try for the National Squad, but preferred to dedicate my life to the eradication of the Dark Forces. And it's like, there is, in like one of the ebooks, you get like a little bit more about Gilderoy Lockhart's, you know, background.
Yeah.
And it's like, it says he wasn't particularly popular. You know, like he was, like the teachers didn't find him to be a particularly popular student. And like he was like very attention seeking even as a student.
Right.
And, but it seems like if you were a seeker who was good enough to be asked for the National Squad, it probably means you're winning a lot of games for Ravenclaw, which would then make you quite popular.
Yeah. The other kind of interesting detail, I think, in that same piece of writing is that, like, he receives detention for, like, carving his name across, like, the Quidditch pitch.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, if they're giving him a remarkable accolade related to the Quidditch pitch and it has nothing to do with his athletics,
yeah,
it kind of makes me think he wasn't on the team.
Yeah, I feel like he wasn't on the team, and if he was, he just wasn't good.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's the case. The other thing that I think is kind of funny about this is that there's the line earlier in the book that like his life's ambition is to like market his own like set of hair care products,
yeah,
and like rid the world of evil or whatever. And it's like one of those things where it's like Harry's ancestors have successfully marketed a line of hair care products, which is the Sleek Easy's hair potion.
Yeah.
And Harry does rid the world of evil.
Right.
In a way. And so it's funny because this one's actually kind of like the same situation where it's like, he's like, I was seeker too. Probably not. And he decided to dedicate his life to the eradication of the dark forces. It's like Harry was seeker and does eradicate the dark forces.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Like another, and does go on to be an Auror after that.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Right. Like, so, even after Voldemort's gone.
So we don't know whether or not Harry was asked for the National Squad. It seems like, based on the limited talent pool available for England's squad,
yeah,
and the fact that Harry is essentially a star on a broomstick and also just incredibly famous otherwise, it seems like they would have asked him to play.
It does seem like that, especially since Wood otherwise seems like a straight-up Quidditch fanatic, and he's apparently only good enough for the what, Puddlemere United practice squad?
Yeah, something like that.
Are you kidding? Yeah. How many, like, the talent, again, yeah, you're right. The talent pool is not very big.
Right, right. You know? It's like any given year, it's like you might be graduating like a handful of Quidditch players because right. most of Harry's teammates are much younger than seventh year. So,
yeah,
like, you
know, I know.
They're going to be there for a while.
Right, yeah, on any given year, the England or Scotland or Irish or Wales team can expect up to four keepers to graduate.
Right.
Up to, but not always.
Definitely not always. Yeah. Yes.
Not even as many as one might graduate, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, maybe it's the type of sport where you can just play for like a long time. So it's like, you know, people are like maybe in their like 40s, 50s, 60s and still.
It seems like that. But also, people are frequently injured in this sport.
Also true. I mean, there are flying cannonballs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's worth keeping in the back of your mind. What I just love the most, though, is that it's like, it just seems like every time Lockhart is trying to make a brag, it's sort of like, Harry does that.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Yeah, all of your ambitions in life, Harry's doing them.
Harry's doing them.
Yeah.
He makes it happen.
Yeah. But yeah, that is phrase. Just always happy to pass on my expertise to less able players. It's like, this is like a quiet dig.
It absolutely is. Like, less able. You haven't even seen him play yet.
I know. It's like, well, that's just kind of a rude thing to say.
He does come to watch him play, though.
Well, I guess there, you know, is that. Yeah.
There is that. He does like show up at the Quidditch game. That's almost surprising.
It is kind of surprising. Yeah. It's like, how is he able to find time to take a break from looking in the mirror?
Yeah. Or, you know, answering fan mail.
Exactly. Exactly. He has very important business to attend to.
Stuff is happening with this giant peacock quill.
Right. So the next line down, though, Ron refers to him as a brainless git, and Hermione says, he is not a brainless git, said Hermione shrilly as they half ran towards the library. It's like, come on, Hermione. Yes, he is.
Like, that just worked on him. You know you shouldn't be allowed to check out that book.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
The writing is on the wall. Wait, no, that's the wrong chapter.
Wrong chapter.
That was
nailed it.
To last week's chapter.
Yep. Then we get a description of Madame Pince, a thin, irritable woman who looked like an underfed vulture, and I was just like, Animagus maybe, but ooh, probably not, because you have to register, and otherwise she'd just be an unregistered vulture.
Yeah, right. Madame Pitts is another one of those characters that is so absent from the story in any other capacity other than her duties as the school librarian, that it's once again one of these situations where you're like, is she a real person?
Right, yeah. It's like her role in the school is to, I guess she is the librarian, but it seems like her goal is to make sure that no one actually reads books.
Yes.
It's like, well, I have my books and I will protect the books. And if you want to read them, well, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
I don't like that.
I'm going to spend most of my time finding ways to get you to leave the library and you may not take the books.
I know. And it's like, it is so at odds with like any experience I've had with like a real librarian who was like so excited that you're just there and want to read and
yes,
like give you books and help you find things.
Right, precisely. Real librarians, totally for the win.
Yeah.
Madame Pince, absolutely not.
Why would you want such a strict anti like child person running your school library? Like, Dumbledore's hiring is just bonkers.
It is sometimes. It is indeed. Yeah, maybe it's just one of those things where he's just like, maybe like he's too kind to a fault. A little bit where it's like, okay, I understand you're trying to like help people out and stuff like that, but you should also probably have good instructors who are encouraging enthusiasm in their students.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we scroll down a little bit later, I think that we are learning a little bit more about where Hermione would like to start their Polyjuice Potion Brewing, which is Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, where they were guaranteed some privacy. And this is another one of those where I'm like, how much are people not using this bathroom?
Right.
Like just, I mean, because it's like, I could see a world where you're like, given a choice, I'll just like walk up an extra flight of stairs and use like the next floor's bathroom.
Yeah.
But like, in my mind, I'm like, it seems unlikely that no one ever goes in there.
Yeah.
Hard stop.
That no one ever goes in. Right. Like, unless, is it still like taped off from the attack maybe?
Oh, maybe so. Maybe yeah. So. Okay.
I guess that could be the case.
We'll go with that. Because, okay. I mean, even before, I think we said, like, you know, Hermione's like, it's kind of hard to pee when somebody's staring at you.
And it's like, so you use it.
Yeah, right. Maybe Hermione's the only one who goes.
Yeah, she's like, when I got to go, I got to go. Look out, Myrtle.
Oh, man. Just definitely too much of a visual there for poor Hermione. Okay. Let's see. What do we got next?
All right. Hermione's looking at the recipe for a polyjuice potion, Ben's favorite potion in the series.
I don't. Okay. Let me clarify. I don't dislike polyjuice potion as a concept. I think it's very clever. And I think even as we get into it here, once you look at all of like the ingredients that were selected to be specifically like applied to the polyjuice potion,
yeah,
they're all things that like have something to do with like either transfer of essence from one thing to another, this degree of like duality. You've got like the boom slang skin, which is like a second skin, and you are going to be like inside of.
Yeah, I actually looked up because I know that each thing in the polyjuice potion is like carefully selected. So if you go on Pottermore, you can read about it and why each part of the recipe made it on the list. So lacewing flies represent the first part of the name suggested an intertwining or binding together of two identities.
Like lacing. Yeah,
yes. Okay. So there's leeches to suck the essence out of one and into the other.
Okay.
There's the horn of a bicorn, which just has the idea of duality.
Yep. Okay. I got
there's
that.
Knot grass, which is a hint of being tied to another person, like with a knot. Fluxweed is the immutability of the body as it is changed into another, and the boom slang skin shedding the outer body and a new inner.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. So it's like when it comes down to it, it's like I think polyjuice is very clever. I love all the thought that clearly went into like devising why these ingredients would make this particular, you know, final end result and stuff like that. Yeah. Like it's all very clever. I think what mostly bothers me about polyjuice potion is that it's just sort of like it just comes up as sort of like the catch-all solution in so many different scenarios.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just it's kind of like, all right, yeah, once again we'll use polyjuice potion.
Yeah. This is what's interesting here though is that they give you this list of ingredients is that like if you're really paying attention to what they are like this little paragraph are the hints you need in Goblet of Fire, two books from now, to know that like someone is under polyjuice potion.
Yes, yes. Because I think when Snape corners Harry at some point in time, he's specifically like boom slang skin missing from my private cupboard, something like that.
Yes. Do you know what a boom slang is?
I don't know what a boom slang is.
Okay, so this is one I kept reading and I was like, how do I not know what a boom slang is? Like we've done so many magical creatures, we've looked into so many things, and it's like the reason it's like, oh, this is another one Newt didn't put in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them or whatever. Like boom slang, it sounds like it's got to be something crazy, and it's actually the reason it's not in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is because it's not a magical creature at all. It's just a regular snake.
It's a regular. I mean, I knew it was a snake.
Yeah.
But there is like you could actually go and encounter a boom
slangs are real snakes that are highly venomous and live in Africa.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay.
So it is interesting as well too that it just so happens to be that like the, you know, the monster is a basilisk, which is a giant, highly venomous snake. And it sounds like a boom slang is kind of like the smaller version of one.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, I'll take that. But then there's, of course, one last ingredient that is still required. And I've got to tell you, there's something just like Ron says, I'm drinking nothing with crab's toenails in it.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. When it comes down to it, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, what would be, I mean, toenail seems like basically about as bad as it can get.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like making me gag just thinking about it. I'm sorry to everybody who's just like driving to work right now and now is thinking about toenails.
In their mouth.
It's like, it is like actually making me like.
It is gross.
I'm having like a physiological reaction, but it does seem just, it seems just as bad to imagine like hair or something. No good. No good whatsoever. What I do think is interesting is we know when they make Harry's polyjuice potion way later in Deathly Hallows that the potion itself actually turns gold when they put it in there, which is something that I like about the potion because I feel like somehow it's like sentience doesn't seem like the right word, but I feel like your resulting potion is a kind of reflection of your character.
It feels like it's up there with like what your wand is or what your Patronus is or, you know, what your Boggart is.
Yes. So it's like what color would your polyjuice be?
Exactly. What color is your polyjuice? Put that on wizardingworld.com.
I know.
And the fact that Harry's is gold then I think is like a reflection of like Harry is the Sorcerer's Stone kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like we just made a video. It's going live later today as we're recording this about like like the real history of magic.
Yes.
And there's this like one particular painting that we came across because like Nicolas Flamel and was like a real person, in case you didn't know.
Yes.
And like alchemists actually tried to make the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
And they wanted it to be able to turn metal into gold and produce the elixir of life. This is a real thing people did. Nicolas Flamel wasn't actually even an alchemist.
But it's a real thing they tried to do.
Tried to do. Yes, obviously, they didn't succeed.
Right.
But there's this like one painting that came up across our research where it's like this alchemist carrying this bottle, which is presumably full of the elixir of life.
Right.
And it is a gold liquid.
Yes.
Which I was like, that is exactly why Harry's Polyjuice Potion turns gold. It is literally because of this painting. Because the rest of the painting then has this like black ribbon coming out of the bottle. And the ribbon says like, let us ask the four elements of nature, which then is like... If you don't know, the four Hogwarts houses are each associated with the different like element. So like Gryffindor's fire, Slytherin's water, Hufflepuff's ground, Ravenclaw's air.
Yeah.
So those are the four elements that said ribbon could be referencing there. And then on that same painting, you have like this stag and a doe looking up at the bottle of gold liquid. And then just off to the side, like an owl also staring at it. And it's like, well, this is just such a Harry Potter image, like
right, yeah. Yeah. How is it not a Harry Potter image to have this much Harry Potter stuff all located in one,
right,
one visual representation?
Right.
Yeah. So kind of unbelievable. Yeah. So anyway, that it's been something we've like delved into, and I'm sure we talked about it a little bit with our chapters back in Philosopher's Stone. But Harry definitely, I think, is intended to be like the living, breathing version of the Philosopher's Stone.
The Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. But let's see. So this is also so annoying, too, where Hermione down at the bottom says, but if you don't want to find out it's Malfoy, I'll go straight to Madame Pince and hand the book back in. And I just highlighted that. And I was just like, guys, put on the cloak. Like, there are so other ways you can do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? Yep. But this is also during like the period of time that I think it's kind of cool because like Hermione's Gryffindor nature, I think, is really, really coming out inside of this chapter. Like she starts by saying like, well, if you two are going to chicken out, fine. And, you know, she's like, clearly this is like one of those instances like where Hermione is the one sort of like driving the ship on like, no, we're going to need to break some rules in order to do this. But you know what? We need to because specifically like, you know, I think like the threat to Muggleborns is basically worse than brewing up a difficult potion. And so like her thinking here is that like, I mean, I think it's growth even from the first book where she's like, you know, like you're going to get us killed or worse expelled. It's like, this is an instance where it's like, okay, she's kind of got like her priorities back where maybe they're
supposed back where they're supposed to be, where it's like, yes, the threat of being caught stealing them might get you expelled, but otherwise the consequence might be death.
So, yeah, somebody might end up dying. So
yeah, anyway, well, specifically her, even because she is Muggleborn.
She is Muggleborn. Yeah, so that's yeah. It's cool to see Hermione kind of like, you know, standing up for herself and, you know, for the cause.
Yeah. Okay. So there's an interesting line on the next page though when Ron asks how long it's going to take. And it says, well, since the fluxweed has got to be picked at the full moon and the lace swings have got to be stewed for 21 days, I'd say it'd be ready in about a month. So first of all, it's interesting that the fluxweed has to be picked at the full moon because it's sort of like, is this part of like what they're learning in astronomy then? There are magical properties that like are unlocked on Earth based on the position of the stars and stuff.
I sort of like that a lot because, you know, I think like traditional science would probably suggest that, you know, like for the most part, unless there's anything else different about the fluxweed itself, you know, you would assume like, okay, I mixed fluxweed with all these things and nothing happened.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, when did you pick the fluxweed? It's like, does that matter?
It matters. Actually, this is also interesting because like the full moon is what causes werewolves to transform.
Oh, sure.
So the full moon, you have to get the fluxweed at the full moon because that's what's going to make you transform.
Right, right.
Oh, that's interesting.
I like that. In fact, I think again, we talked about this before, but the set of steps necessary in order to become an animagus, I think also involves possibly fluxweed, but I think there is something also attached to like the full moon nature of like whatever you're doing, or maybe
there is like a 1 month, so you have to like keep a leaf of some kind in your mouth for a month.
Wasn't it the mandrake? No, was it mandrake?
Was it?
We did this. We talked about.
Well,
this,
I know like, we talked about this, like last episode. Yeah. I know. Like what was it?
Yeah,
was it a mandrake leaf?
Something has transformative properties.
I think it was the Mandrake Leaf because it's supposed to be like that's what allows you to like transform back because it's supposed to like untransform you.
Right.
That was it.
Yes.
But I like the idea that if it's a month, maybe it has to go from like moon to moon. How you're measuring what counts as a month.
Right.
Because that would also be part of it. That feels like it makes sense. I don't know. I'd have to go back and check. But then the other thing about it being a month or at minimum 21 days, I suppose, supposing that you already have just a ready supply of full moon flux weed, is that later on, this creates like a weird continuity error, if you will, where Slughorn shows up and has ready to go Felix Felicis and Polyjuice Potion and Amortentia like on day one, even though he was recruited like less than 21 days ago.
Yeah, I know. This is one of those, because I've always thought about that when you fast forward to Half-Blood Prince.
Is it less than 21? When does Dumbledore pick Harry up?
It always seems like it's around his birthday, but yeah. It's hard to say without reviewing that particular story. But I don't think it matters, though, because in that same thing, I think it takes 6 months to brew.
The Felix Felicis. Okay, so maybe that's the bigger one.
He also has that on hand. But the thing that kind of makes sense to me about that, I mean, I guess somebody who is a potions master and who's also been on the run for the past year of his life, it doesn't necessarily not stand to reason that he would have these potions brewed and ready just in case.
I guess that makes sense because specifically Polyjuice and Felix Felicis could help you evade the Death Eaters.
Right.
I guess,
of course, he tells us about the two occasions he's used Felix, but...
That's true. Well, so maybe he hasn't had to use it yet.
And
I guess we don't know that the Felix Felicis he gives Harry comes from the cauldron in the classroom. He could have just started the brew, but also had some ready.
That's also a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a vial ready to go just in case, but here's how you would start it.
Right. Okay.
All right. I'll give you a pass, Slughorn.
All right.
There we go.
We'll go with it.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although, to be fair, it's not a concern either, but to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership. Because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Otherwise, we are getting up for our Quidditch match against Slytherin.
Yes.
Where, kind of as per always, it seems like the morning of is a little glum for everybody. It seems like everybody, as much as they love Quidditch, everybody who plays Quidditch the day of is nerves are a big part.
Right.
You know, they're all just like always like, oh man, it's game day. Why am I even doing this? Am I even sure about it? I don't even know. Can't even eat anything.
I know. Well, it seems like a lot of their nerves are to do with the Slytherin's brooms this time around. Like, we're about to get flattened for sure.
Right.
Which, yes. Wood turns to Harry. It'll be down to you, Harry, which I just highlighted when I was like, it's always down to Harry. What are you talking about?
I know.
know. Yeah. It's one of those. I mean, we've made videos before. We've talked about it endlessly. But, you know, Quidditch just basically making no sense, especially at the Hogwarts level, where it pretty much seems, because this goes back to the end of last year as well, where Harry like has to miss the last game and they get like flattened by Ravenclaw or whatever. And it's sort of like, why would they get flattened? Like, I mean, sure, maybe like without a good seeker, you know, out there on the field,
yeah,
like they struggle a little bit or they have less of a chance of winning the game, but there's no reason why they should be like annihilated.
I know, right? The other chasers are like, the rest of the team is still good too.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's like, what else is everybody else doing out there this whole time?
I know. I don't know.
But yeah, so, but yeah, I do like the fact that he says, get to that snitch before Malfoy or die trying.
Yeah. There you go. We also get the description in the next paragraph here. It says, Madam Hooch, the Quidditch teacher. I was like, the Quidditch teacher? What? Wait. Can you take Quidditch as a class?
Because it doesn't seem like it.
Doesn't seem like it.
Hermione definitely wasn't taking it. It's one of her 12 classes
exactly.
Next year.
Can you get an OWL in Quidditch?
I don't think you can.
Because I feel like Harry would be all about that.
Yes.
You can't even get an OWL in flying, I don't think. So.
No, I don't think so.
You know, it didn't seem like you have to take flying for more than one day, as far as I can tell.
You get one day, and then Madam Hooch refs a handful of games in the meantime.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a very busy job, I don't think. Maybe she just hangs out with Madam Pince the rest of the time.
Yeah. Maybe. They're just down there at the Three Broomsticks just throwing them back. Like, maybe, man, we have the best jobs in the world. Like, I teach one day of flying. I referee 6 Quidditch matches. Do I even enforce the rules? Do I even know what's happening in the game? Barely.
Okay, new headcanon is that the Three Broomsticks are Madame Rosmerta, Madam Hooch, and Madam Pince.
Oh, they're the Madams.
They're the Madams.
Didn't we have a different theory about the Three Broomsticks?
Do we?
I think so. I think we had like a theory that it was Godric and Helga and Rowena.
Oh,
right.
I
and
like
it's,
it better.
It's 3 because Slytherin left.
Oh, sad.
I know.
So sad. Maybe they needed a place to go and have a beverage because they were sad their friend left.
Yeah.
And so they became the Three Broomsticks.
Right. Can't you just see it and be like, we should start a bar?
Of course we should start a bar.
We should start a bar, right? Yeah. And it's like, you know, but Godric's just like, of course we should start a bar. Let's go. Why aren't we doing this yesterday? Come on. And Helga's like, I'll make drinks. And Rowena's like, guys.
We got other stuff to be doing, but
we
also
have other things to do.
Did you say butterbeer? All right, I'm in.
No one can say no.
Maybe what they did, maybe what was actually happening is that like Hogsmeade was originally like other ruins nearby, and it was just sort of like a like what used to be a building a long time ago. And when they needed like a break from the school, the three of them would get on their respective broomsticks, fly over, and then they would lean them up outside.
Exactly.
Like, we'll go to what we call the Three Broomsticks because that's where we lean our brooms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These, you guys, if we ever end up writing a founder series, you guys will either be nauseated with what we come up with or love it, but we're going to do it either way.
It's gonna happen, and we are going to give you the origin of the Three Broomsticks name. That's going to happen. Okay, so this is the other thing it is. So we always talk about how maybe like the points don't matter or Slytherin scoring is ridiculous, but like, okay, there are 3 paragraphs here, and the moment basically the game starts, maybe it's like a page. There's like a game. There's like a page worth of gameplay that happens. But almost right out of the gate, you just hear about like, oh, the Bludger began to attack Harry. George streaked past and hit it. It came back at Harry. Fred hit it. It came back at Harry. Harry sped around and evaded it. And then he finally hears the score and it says Slytherin leads 60-0. So it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like. The Slytherin team has scored like 6 times in like the first minute or something. Like not a lot happens and they've got 60.
Right. I mean, it basically seems like game start and Slytherins are absolutely dominating.
Yeah.
It seems like, if Harry wasn't able to capture the snitch quickly, they were screwed.
Yeah.
They were going to lose.
I think they were going to lose. So there is, I've always wanted, they never really address this. Like whenever you see them like score in Quidditch, they cut to the scoreboard and like, You know, oh, someone got points, but it's like, does the game continue?
I think it does. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird because like the quaffle is not a magical object itself. It's just a ball.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I often think like, this is kind of a strange one because like you would think that they would have to spend a lot of time going back down to the ground to pick it back up.
Right.
You know, or even if like the ground play of Quidditch could actually be like a factor somehow, like maybe you would like land somebody else, like 20 yards down the pitch when the ball lands on the ground, so you could go and grab it and then throw it to your other person who's already 20 yards further towards the other hoops or something. Like, I don't really know, but I mean, it doesn't seem like the ground ever plays a role in Quidditch at all, which kind of makes you wonder, like, if I wonder if like the quaffle falls slowly.
Like, that could be like, interesting. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like distinctly magical, but it doesn't fall at like 9.8 meters per second. So it can be caught on most occasions by someone who's still flying on broomstick.
Right. That would almost make sense. But like the other thing is there's like, it never seems like if play doesn't stop, you could potentially just be like passing it to each other rapidly on either side of it, you know?
Right.
Just like ding, 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 ding.
Oh, that's a good point. You know what I mean? Yeah. Can you throw the quaffle through both sides of the hoops?
Yeah.
Do we know the answer to that?
I don't know. I would think you could throw it through either side, though.
Because then you're not really guarding three hoops as keeper. You're kind of guarding six.
Six, yeah.
You know, I mean,
like, you got to watch someone like throwing it over your head,
right?
To get behind you.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I never really considered that before, but I don't think that doesn't. I don't. I think that tracks.
I mean, if that's the case, it seems like scoring. If you had like a real good like pass regiment, like you could throw one through this guy, catch it on the other side, they get to the third hoop, make it back through, and just sort of like rotate through, and before you know it, it's like, oh, whoa, they just scored like eight times.
Yes, that is where I think you could start to imagine a world where if Oliver played Seeker on behalf of Harry in that match last year and there was no keeper, that is where you could start to imagine like nobody, like all he was doing was trying to catch the snitch as fast as he could so he could like put them out of their misery.
Yeah.
You know, but like someone has to catch the snitch, otherwise the game won't end. And otherwise they're just going to get, I mean, I guess I could sort of see it.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some logic in there somehow, but we had to work to get to it.
We did. And anyway, there we go. Anyway, Slytherin's up 60-0 basically immediately. Then they call a timeout and everyone comes down and they have a big old pointless talk about how Harry's absolutely being assaulted by one of the bludgers. They really need to stop the game. And then Madame Hooch comes over, or Harry, just, I already said this earlier, says, if we stop now, we'll have to forfeit the match. And it's like, in what world, Harry? What world?
Because also, like, this is an interesting one, but I am shocked that Dobby lets go of the bludger during this particular
moment. Oh, me too. I'm like, surprised it's not hunting him now.
Yes, because it seems like it would be. Because even at the end of the match,
yeah,
Fred and George are still having to, like, it says, Fred and George Weasley wrestling the rogue bludger into a box. It was still putting up a terrific fight. And it's sort of like, okay, Dobby, the match is over, friend. And, I mean, from Dobby's perspective, it's sort of like, it doesn't really matter. I just need to hurt Harry no matter what just to send him home.
Right.
But then you would think that during the break, there would be no reason for the bludger to stop trying to attack him.
Exactly. Like, the bludger should still be attacking him right now.
Yes.
Like, it's being awfully polite, respecting the rules of timeout.
Yes,
but not respecting the rules of the game's over.
The game is over. Let it go, man.
Yeah, you're come on. Work. Yeah. So I don't understand why Madame Hooch hasn't noticed it. I guess maybe she's just like, wow, the Slytherins are scoring a lot. But the fact that she comes over and they're not just like, one of the bludgers is absolutely like attacking Harry. Like, can we just swap it out for another one?
I know. Yeah. No, this to me feels like one of those things where it's like logic would just solve too much of it already, because even Alicia Spinnett is sort of like, you can't let Harry deal with that thing on his own. Let's ask for an inquiry.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when Harry's like, well, we can't because we'll forfeit the match or whatever. But yeah, then Madame Hooch comes over and she's like, ready to resume play? She asked Wood. And I just wrote in all caps, tell her.
I know.
Like, right now. This is the moment. Just be like, hey, I think something's wrong with one of the bludgers. We have a spare. Can we swap it in? Which, I mean, to be fair, Dobby would have been able to just control that one too.
But even that would have been, I feel like, just if you're like that would have been interesting too. If you're like, oh yes, we properly addressed it. it became a problem again.
That's a good point. It's like, yes, we have a spare bludger in case something like this happened. No problem. We'll go swap it out. Oh, turns out still a problem.
Yeah. That would have been interesting. Like, wait, what? Because you're going to find out later this chapter what the deal is anyway.
I know. So you're not left hanging for too terribly long.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then, you know, basically Harry's like, you know, guys, go protect the rest of the team. You got to do what you're going to do. Harry's never going to be able to catch the snitch if you're just sort of like right at his shoulders every which way. Like, you know, how is he supposed to play the game with that happening? So Harry's just like, all right, guys, don't worry about it. I'll just go out there and do my thing and totally win the game. You know, put the entire situation on my back.
Which, I got it.
Yeah, which he totally does.
He totally does. He goes out there. It's just like, you know what? Go ahead and hit me, bludger. And since it hits him in the elbow, which is just a specific detail I always imagined hitting him in the forearm.
Yes, I know. The forearm seems so much more reasonable. The elbow?
The elbow, I'm just like, oh my God.
I know, yeah. It's like a broken bone sounds miserable, but it's like mentally I can reason with it. The idea of like hitting like the tendons or the joint that is your elbow, it's like it feels like if that breaks, then that's just it for the rest of forever.
Yeah,
like,
but
there is no solving this.
But not for one Harry James Potter, who takes his broken elbow, aims himself at Malfoy, and catches the snitch anyway, wins the game. Makes his way down to the ground, where who should come up except Lockhart.
Lockhart.
I love how like the moment for like push has come to shove, and Harry can't even like pretend. He's like, oh no, not you. I'll put up with you in class. I'll do your howling, but you are not magicking my arm right now.
I know this is like the because of how frustrated Madame Pomfrey is when he's finally brought up to the hospital wing, and she's just talking about the dangerous sport and irresponsible teachers and all the rest. And if I was Harry, I'd be like, dude, that's what I said. Anybody, you could ask anybody. I was like, no, take me to the hospital wing. Not this guy. Definitely not this guy. I pleaded with him. He said no.
I told him not to.
Can somebody please get him fired?
Yeah.
Because it does feel like this would be a fireable offense.
Right.
For sure.
Everyone sees him do it.
Right. It's like you removed all of the bones from one of our most important students in his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not all of his bones altogether.
Right. Not all of his. Well, that'd be. I was. Okay. So I think at one point in here, Madame Pomfrey is going to say, like, he's got 33 bones to regrow tonight. And I was like, I wonder how many bones there are in an arm. And I was looking it up, and it says, like, just the first word on Google says 30. Okay. So I was like, well, that's interesting.
Do you think wizards have an extra
bone? I'm like, do wizards have extra bones? And then I was also like, but like, wait, how many bones are in your hand? And it's like, you know, like more than 30. So that then made me think, like, does he still have bones in his hand in this situation? I'm imagining in my brain, when Lockhart does this, he from the shoulder down is boneless.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, that's my interpretation.
But sounds like not, Ben. It sounds like he still has hand bones at the end of glove arm.
No. I feel like they talk about his hand being like a glove. And I feel like his hand can't be glove-like if there happens to be bones in there.
Well, look, there could be bones in there. You just can't activate anymore because there's no other bones attached to them.
I guess this is fair.
You know?
This is fair. Yeah, you're right. You know what? You're right. How can I argue with such sound?
I don't know.
Sound counter argument. Or possibly Madame Pomfrey was just making a reference to her sweet, sweet knowledge of how many bones are in an arm approximately.
Yeah, or wizards have extra arm bones.
Or that. That's another.
Or less, you know. Maybe they have, you're like, oh, it takes muggles like 30 bones in their hands, not wizards. They got one big old bone hand.
That makes no sense.
That doesn't make sense at all.
We're so in the weeds. It's a good thing we're not doctors.
Yeah, no. Nope.
Yeah, because we clearly do not know what we're talking about at all.
Nope.
But either way, yeah, so Harry does make his way up to the hospital wing. You know, Ron has to help him into his pajamas, which is like one of those things. Because I think it says that Madame Pomfrey throws Harry a pair of pajamas, and I'm sort of like, okay, man, the guy's missing a whole arm's worth of catchable.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. You caught a snitch with your other hand.
Right, yeah. Like, people at the school just have, like, they just don't care.
No tact.
Yeah, no tact whatsoever.
Yeah.
No tact whatsoever. But, of course, the other thing that is kind of interesting is that in order to regrow the bones in his arm, he has to take Skelegrow, which is kind of cool because it was actually invented by one of Harry's own ancestors, Linfred of Stinchcombe.
Oh, there you go. Linfred of Stinchcombe.
Which where the Potter family comes from. So Harry is, this is another incident just kind of like before where Lockhart makes a mistake and it's like Harry's lineage is the one sort of solving it.
Right.
You know, it's like everything Lockhart's trying to do, Harry can do better, or yeah. Harry's family can do better.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I wonder like if when he took like I wonder if like if you take this, like it ends up like fortifying your other bones in some way, or if you like had any other like chips or breaks or tiny fractures, it's like, yeah, we're just going to fix it all right now.
I like to think so.
Yeah.
I like and I don't know why this is the case. There's something that actually sounds kind of delightful to me about Skele-Grow. Like, not the idea of me needing to like regrow bones, but like it almost seems like a fireball kind of beverage.
Like a cinnamon flavor?
Like a cinnamon hot, yeah. Comforting.
It says it burned Harry's mouth and throat as it went down, making him cough and splutter. Harry can't handle his liquor at all. So,
not even one bit.
Nope.
Not even one bit. Oh, poor Harry. But one of the things I do really like here is that kind of as per always after a big win, they usually have like a party in the common room or whatever. But it sounds like his friends bring up cakes, sweets, and bottles of pumpkin juice. They gather around Harry's bed and we're just getting started on what promised to be a good party. This is kind of one of those where like there is something just super cozy about this entire concept to me. Like it seems really delightful to just think like, It's cold and wet and rainy outside, but you're like warm and comfortable and all your friends are gathered around you and you got delicious treats and such.
Yeah.
I'm like, that sounds like a good time.
It's pretty good.
I'd be all about it. But of course, Madame Pomfrey's like, nope, this guy's got the 33 bones to regrow. So out right now. So
out.
He doesn't really get to have that party. But nope. either way, it's like a dream of mine would be to have this party.
Yeah, to be hospitalized and then have a party with people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, maybe hospitalized is a stretch, you know, but maybe.
Right.
Maybe
but to be laying in bed and for have people to come in with food.
Yeah, not so bad. Yeah. Not so bad. That sounds kind of nice to me.
Yeah.
So I wrote such cozy little vibes.
Yep.
I enjoy the sound of it.
Okay, so there's another line before that where Hermione says, I want to know how he fixed that bludger. Like, she's pretty convinced that Malfoy is the one who did it, which is like kind of interesting to me because like in the last book when Quirrell's doing the broom, like it's like, you know, oh, it takes power. Can't nothing interfere with a broomstick's magic? Only powerful, you know, like.
Yeah, right.
You know, it seems like the same would apply to Quidditch stuff, but I guess not.
No, I would agree that it does seem to be the case that it would be very difficult to do this because, especially if a school only has one set of bludgers, it makes you think that, like, the enchantments associated with, like, making them do what they're supposed to do would be fairly complex.
Yeah.
Would be my thought.
Yeah.
Either way, though, I guess tell me what your imagination is here, because Dobby being at the school and the fact that Harry is playing Slytherin suggests to me that Lucius has come to the school to watch the game and has brought Dobby with him. Or do you think that Dobby is just like,
it's the middle of the night, so it's not like.
You know, this is like one of those where I'm just assuming Lucius is just staying at Hogsmeade or something.
Oh.
He's like traveled in so that he can, I mean, because he bought all the brooms.
That's true,
for
yeah.
For the Southern Quidditch team. So
presumably he's there to watch Draco.
Right, and then be disappointed with Draco.
Yes, yeah. I guess it's possible they would have been in the platform earlier too, because like Draco would have been, like, is he just bringing Dobby with him everywhere he goes?
Well, we know that later towards the end of the book, when Harry eventually, you know, frees Dobby, spoilers, that he can free Dobby because Dobby's with Lucius. Because
Dobby's there, yeah. So I guess that stands to reason. I never really considered it. I thought Dobby was just, like, appearing there of his own accord, but.
I just think it makes sense for Lucius to be there, or at least nearby.
Yeah. You know, I like that better, that he's like at Hogsmeade or something, and it's like the middle of the night, so I'm sneaking out.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. but yeah, we get a good exchange with Dobby here. This is one of those where we don't get the line that we get in the movie, which I do think is really hilarious, but it's like, Dobby didn't mean to kill Harry Potter, just maim or seriously injure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those, like, better in the movies.
Yes, really good.
But Dobby also is, like, there's a little bit, he's, like, he's definitely not the best planner. Obviously, his plans are terrible to begin with. He's just trying to hurt Harry out of school. But when he tells him that he's the one who blocked the barrier, he just says, never did Dobby dream Harry Potter would get to school another way. And it's like, what? You didn't think they'd find a way to get Harry to school ever? That was it. We're done. We can't do it.
I know. It's such logic that I feel like I never questioned as, you know, like an elementary school student reading these books for the first time, because in my head it was like, well, you missed the train. What else are you supposed to do? Like, get there some other way?
That's it. Absolutely. I don't have to go to school this year.
Right, yeah. You miss the train, you don't go to school.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I remember, it's like, I always remember, like, when we were growing up being like, oh man, it'd be kind of cool if we got there a little bit late, then I'd be at school for a little bit less today. And it'd be like, but it's like, but you'd still go to school. It's not like, oh yeah, get in the car. It's like, if you're late, then you'll have just been in trouble. And you know, it's not like you'd miss school then.
Right, right. Yes, yeah. Exactly. But yeah, so then Dobby continues to sort of just be like rather honest with Harry all the time. Like Harry's sort of like, wait a second, that was you. And Dobby's like, it was indeed.
I know. He's so willing to come forward on all of these things that he's done, but so like, I can't tell you about the Chamber of Secrets. Whoops. I can't tell you who's doing it.
I know. So Dobby is basically the Hagrid of Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like the, should have told you that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it just keeps coming up that Dobby's sort of like, yeah, I can tell you a whole lot of things, but definitely not all the things, but like almost all the things and where to look.
Enough to move the plot forward, but that's it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The thing that always kills me though, is that after Dobby explains that he was the one that stopped Harry from getting on the barrier to platform 9 3/4, he says that he had to iron his hands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that sounds so bad.
I know. Well, it says he showed Harry 10 long bandaged fingers and it's like, they're still hurt.
I know. It's like, it's been months.
I know.
Yeah. Dobby, gosh, how hard did you go? But then you also get the really sad line from Dobby where he says, let's see here. Dobby was so shocked when he heard Harry Potter was back at Hogwarts. He let his master's dinner burn. Such a flogging Dobby had never had, sir. I just put like a sad face next to that.
I know.
Just like, man.
So sad.
It's just so sad. Poor Dobsters. Which, by the way, this was like another one of those details we just talked about in the History of Magic video today that we dropped. But it was just sort of this idea that house elves are not actually unique to the wizarding world of Harry Potter. In, I think, like English folklore, there are such a thing called brownies or Dobbies, which obviously is where Dobby has gotten his name from. But they are essentially what you know as house elves, but like with slightly different terms or conditions.
It's more like they're just sort of like in your house and they're determined to help you as long as you don't pay them or give them a name or treat them badly.
Yeah, it's kind of like their existence in your home is not so much of like a like the status of like where Dobby is like working for his masters. It's almost like the brownies or the Dobbies exist in the home of their own accord and they're sort of like up to their own things. And,
right.
And those things happen to be doing like household related stuff, but it's less of I think of like a master servant kind of like relationship.
Right, yeah. You
know? At least as far as I can tell. But so I thought that was really interesting because I mean, you know, like I've always thought Dobby was such an amazing name for this creature, you know, for this house elf. And it's like, wow, okay, that's actually more like a reference to English folklore. So
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
That is fun.
Yeah.
I like later on where he's like, Harry's just straight up disagreeing with him. He says, I'm not going anywhere. One of my best friends is Muggleborn. And Dobby's just like, Harry Potter risks his own life for his friends. I love the description of this. It says, moan Dobby in a kind of miserable ecstasy. So noble, so valiant.
Dude, your Dobby voice right now is like 11 stars out of 10 stars.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm so impressed. But hilariously, I also highlighted is a kind of miserable ecstasy. I mean, it's probably like the most unusual line for the entire book. That would be a really funny challenge for us to do is to pick our favorite singular sentences that are non-plot related.
Oh, yeah. from the book.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Dobby moaned in a kind of miserable ecstasy.
That's up there. That's a good one.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Very descriptive indeed. But anyway, then, so there are footsteps coming from the passageway outside. Dobby realizes that he can't be caught, and there's the loud crack that nobody ever seems to hear.
I know, even though it's loud.
Even though it's loud. They always specify that it's loud, but it never seems like apparition is ever giving anybody away a la the loud crack.
Yeah, nope.
Yeah, so I don't know. Whatever.
Other than that fox that, like, Bellatrix kills.
Yeah,
she's like, I thought maybe an auror.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Look at you go, man. Your voices today.
I'm on it.
Your kids are so lucky. They're gonna get they're gonna get such a good version of the story. But then, of course, yeah. So the big thing that happens next is we know that there has been yet another attack as Dumbledore and McGonagall enter the hospital wing with the now petrified Colin Creevy,
who was bringing grapes to Harry.
Yes, I highlighted and underlined grapes, and I was like. Grapes?
Grapes.
Like, why grapes?
Here's, okay, here, like, It's obviously sad that Colin gets attacked.
Of course.
Attacked here. But like, I want to know what the backstory for Colin's night was. Because here's the situation. Colin Creevy is, this is the middle of the night. The moonlight is shining through. Like, it is late. Yeah. Colin Creevy is decided over in the Gryffindor Tower, like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring Harry some food. I'm going to bring him some grapes.
It's probably his favorite fruit. I know.
He's like, so I like to think that Colin has found the kitchens on his own as a first year. That means he makes it out of Gryffindor Tower, makes it all the way down to the kitchens, which he's found, wakes up some house elf, gets the grapes, and mind you, brings his camera.
Yes, yeah.
Brings his camera, and then is making his way up to the hospital wing when suddenly the basilisk springs out of nowhere with enough time for Colin to pull the camera up to his face, like, gotta take a picture of this. But then, as he does that, as he's framing the shot, the basilisk stares directly into the lens and petrifies him, thus causing him to drop the grapes. And also, what's he planning on doing? Like, Harry, wake up. I got grapes. You want to take a picture?
I know. It's like Colin doesn't even know that his friends have already brought him all sorts of cakes and sweets.
What is the best case scenario for Colin here? Like that he's going, because he brought the camera. Oh,
it's hilarious that Colin, I mean, dear sweet Colin, thinks for some reason that Harry won't be fed in the hospital wing at school.
Or that he's going to want to be awoken in the middle of the night.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Don't worry. So what we also know is that Dumbledore happens to also be out in the night going downstairs for some hot chocolate.
Oh, I highlighted that. I was like, does Dumbledore need to be roaming around for this?
I know. It's like, this to me feels more like an alibi.
Yeah.
Like where it's just sort of like, of course, like McGonagall's like, what were you doing up? It's like, I was going for some hot chocolate. And McGonagall's like, of course you were.
Yeah, sure.
Like, why not? Like, you're the most powerful magical wizard in the entire state of existence at the moment. And you can't, can we get him like a kettle for his office?
Certainly there's got to be some, I mean, earlier in this very book, McGonagall was like, and sandwiches. You know?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Certainly Dumbledore can make hot chocolate whenever he wants.
Do you think there's any possibility that instead of going for a hot chocolate himself, he was contemplating bringing Harry some
bringing
hot
Harry. Harry.
It's like, I know you've already got grapes. Here's some more
cocktails, Mr. Creamy here.
Quick, let's take a selfie. It's just the most unlikely set of events. Anyway, I don't know how we're laughing so much at Colin's petrification.
It's the grapes.
It's the grapes.
The grapes. What is the story of the grapes, Colin?
I'm losing it. Anyway, we're so close to the end, too. Oh, man. So more ominous thoughts ahead, which is that basically they're attempting to figure out what's going on. They try to open up the back of the camera, which just Dumbledore maybe just doesn't know how cameras work because
this would expose the film.
This would expose the film and ruin the evidence. But apparently somehow Basilisk magic was able to melt the plastic of the camera. Yep. Why not? The Jettisim comes out, and basically Albus is able to then declare to Professor McGonagall and to Madame Pomfrey that the Chamber of Secrets is indeed open again.
I know. I highlight it because he declares it's melted. Melted to Madame Pomfrey, wondering, all melted. And McGonagall says, what does this mean, Albus? And he says, it means the Chamber of Secrets is indeed open again. And it's like, the melted camera told you that?
Right.
No, like nothing about that makes sense. There was no there was no melting last time.
I wasn't entirely sure based on the grapes and the petrified muggle student.
Or the cat,
yes. And the writing on the wall and potentially blood. What really gave it away at this point in time, here in the middle of the night, was the melted camera.
That's what did it. It's like, yes. Wow, oh, I didn't know we had melted plastic in play. Hold on. The chamber do be open.
This is okay.
Oh, you know what? We were wondering about the scorch marks last time, and now we have melted plastic. So, is there like a certain sort of
heat signature?
Heat to the stair?
Oh, You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not, we're going to have to keep an eye out for that with the next petrifications as well, because that is kind of interesting, because the scorch marks is one of those things where it's like, when you see that detail in the last chapter, it's like, why were there scorch marks?
I've always just sort of imagined like it locks eyes with you and then you die. But I'm way more enjoying the idea that the basilisk has heat vision. You know, yeah. He's like, look out.
I just laser vision you. Yeah.
What's so scary about that basilisk? Oh, you mean the one with the laser eyes over there?
No. People are eventually going to be like, okay, so I started listening to this Harry Potter podcast. At first, it sounded pretty cool. At some point in time, they suggested that the castle used to be a dragon and then that the basilisk had laser vision. So
I'm not suggesting it, Ben. It melted a camera, and there were scorch marks on the ground.
Jay, the writing is on the wall.
Exactly. The writing is on the wall.
Oh, man. Then Albus gets all dramatic on us, and McGonagall says to Dumbledore, but Albus, surely, who? The question is not who, said Dumbledore, his eyes on Colin. The question is, how?
Right. It doesn't seem... He should be like, well, that's obvious. It's clearly Voldemort. The question's how.
Yeah. Right. It's like, yeah, he's being awfully dramatic. Because it does feel like the very next thing that any logical person standing in this room in the middle of the night with the petrified boy might say is like... But back to the question of who.
Yeah. The question is not who, but how. You know who it is? I do. Who? But how? It's like, guys...
It's like, Harry's here. We can't tell him.
We can't tell him. That'll ruin the plot. He's got to think it's Hagrid later, okay?
I know, yeah.
He has to trust Tom Riddle.
There's so much left to still be done. I know, yeah, he could have just said Tom Riddle's name right here and it would have done it.
Yes.
Anyway, but yeah, so my summation is that I love a good Quidditch chapter. It's a fun chapter all the way around. We get some Dobby action inside of here. There's another attack. Honestly, it's a really action-packed chapter.
Yeah.
I had lots of highlighting in this one, lots of notes scribbled into the margin. So overall, a really good one. Jay, do you have a review for us to close out?
I sure do, Ben. It's from Luke.
Hey,
probably Luke. Not my son Luke, but maybe.
You never know.
You know, he can't read or write very well. He can read a little. He can't write. Well, he can write a little too, but probably can't type. Also, this says they've been a fan for 7 to 8 years, and he is not that old. So
okay, so it's almost certainly not
almost
Luke.
Certainly not
unless
him.
He's lying
or it's a typo in the 7 to 8 years. It says I've been watching you guys on YouTube for the past 7 to 8 years now for your Harry Potter content, so when you started this podcast I was ecstatic. I've listened to and read the Harry Potter series at least a dozen times, and I've seen the movies too many times to count, and your theories are so fun to listen to and think over. Dumbledore's big plan is fantastic, by the way. I was wondering what your guys' personal favorite Harry Potter books and movies are. My favorite book is Half-Blood Prince, but my favorite movie is Philosopher's Stone. I think it's way underrated as a book, and keep up the good work.
Oh, man. Okay, so that's a really great question. And I mean, I've gone back and forth on this one a million times. I think that Goblet of Fire has historically been my favorite book because I think it's like, it's the last time that I think we're getting to see the wizarding world through these like rose-colored lenses for Harry, like where he's getting to experience like the Quidditch World Cup and you're being introduced to the Triwizard Tournament and like students from Beauxbatons and Durmstrang, and there's like the Yule Ball, and there's, you know, just like all these other cool like magical creations that are being thrown at us, and things, the tone of the story hasn't gotten quite as serious yet, but like once you tip over into Order of the Phoenix, like you start to be really well aware of the full weight that are placed squarely on Harry's shoulders, which doesn't make it less fun, but like I love the magical whimsy that we get, and I feel like it's at peak in Goblet of Fire as far as the books are concerned.
Yeah.
I love Sorcerer's Stone as a movie. I think that's the one that probably visually best captured what I pictured in my head.
I think for the movies, I think my favorite might be Chamber of Secrets.
Okay.
Just because, like, I think, yeah, Philosopher's Stone and Chamber of Secrets, the movies, I think, yes, best captured the Wizarding World as I first pictured it in my head. And then they get, like, a whole makeover moving forward after that. And so it feels like in Chamber of Secrets, they just figured it out a little bit. You know, they fine-tuned everything a little from the first one. Plus, that one has Lockhart in it, which is one of my favorite characters in the movies, especially.
Yes.
It's hilarious. And it's got the Basilisk and Fox. And yeah, I think the second one is a very good movie. And then I also like the Half-Blood Prince movie as well, as far as the when they're a little bit older.
Yeah, it seems like Half-Blood is also one of those like where they finally let Daniel Radcliffe sort of like have maybe some like fun, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, especially the scene where he's under Felix Felicis and he's talking to Slughorn and like that whole situation. It's really, and then he goes to like the funeral and they do like the pincers.
Yeah, scene. That's hilarious.
You also have the cave, which is amazing. I mean, obviously the lightning struck tower happens inside of that one.
A lot of stuff happens in that one.
Yeah.
And I like Slughorn in there as well. And then for the books, probably growing up, my favorite was The Goblet of Fire for a long time until Deathly Hallows came out. And I just like, I loved the ending. I love the way, like, even that final battle, like Harry is just like fastening ribbons on the story over and over and over. And it's like, oh my God, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh, it's Draco's one. Oh, he's the master. Boom. You know, it's like it all, like, it just like, it all comes together so nicely at the end. And I always just like really felt it was a very satisfying read. So probably Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great answer. You can't ever go wrong with the finale because it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
The only thing there is that it also has the heist at the ministry, which is just,
so there's that.
I hate the heist at the ministry.
Yes, stand the heist at the ministry.
I know. Yeah, I'm just, it's
I can't wait for us to get to that chapter, Ben.
I know.
Years from now.
You know what's going to happen? I'm going to love it.
You're going to love it. You know what?
I'm going to be like, I thought I didn't like this chapter. Turns out I love it because that's what happened with the Death Day party. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Anyway, guys, thank you so much as ever for listening. We super appreciate it. Definitely be sure to give us a review and hopefully we can cover it in a future episode.
Yes. Otherwise, join us next week as we get into Chapter 11, The Dueling Club, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.